You're listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the rebooted Bob Dean Show. Yay! Episode 2. I want to thank Jennifer Diamond, the fabulous author and psychic, for being my first guest last week. And this week's guest is a young man that we'll explain how we met in just a few minutes. His name's Michael Hooper. He's a writer and an actor here in Los Angeles, and he's a pretty cool kid, so we're looking forward to that. It's been an interesting week. I hope that you will remember to like and follow us on LA Talk Radio, iHeart Radio Podcast, Stitcher, and what's the other one? iTunes. And also, I am BobDean2971 on Instagram. I'll have a Twitter thing soon enough, and because I have it, but I don't use it a whole lot. Bob Dean on Facebook and The Bob Dean Show on Facebook. Will you, in the next few days, you'll be able to go there to rewatch episodes. I want to thank my friend Olivia Neil Howell for this friggin' fabulous Irish cat. She is the niece of Tamara Pacwa, who you will be meeting on one of these shows. Tamara Pacwa is the beautiful blonde, like the Marsha Brady of our high school, that introduced me to the scofflaw of high school society back in Nashville, Tennessee. Now, I want to talk about some things in my convoluted commentary. You know, I'm an actor and a comedian, which means I'm a bartender. I've been a bartender for 42 years. I started off in Miami, then Miami Beach, then back to Nashville, Tennessee, where my hometown, yeehaw, Nashville, Tennessee, where I tended bar for many years, then back to Miami, then back to Nashville, and now I am in Beverly Hills. I've been in Beverly Hills at some fine places for the last 19 years, and I've worked in every place from five-star dining to where they will shoot you over a pool cue. Okay. I'm not a mixologist. I am a bartender. So let me give you a few facts. When you come in and ask for that cocktail menu on the bar, a real bartender's left eye starts to twitch because we know that you're going to order something that has slap and tickle basil, crushed berries, eye of newt, two drops of Peruvian pooch deuce water, which is all going to be shaken up, and you're going to take one sip and you're going to say, this isn't what I thought it was, because it's nauseating. Cocktail menus are the kiss of death. Also, a little bit of bar etiquette. When you come in with those earbuds or earphones, or even worse, talking out loud on a phone, you confuse your bartender, because your bartender thinks that you're talking to them. So we come over, and I have actually had people like dismiss me, like, psh. But you're sitting there on your phone, and you know what it sounds like? You'd think that you're just talking to one person in the world, but what I and the other people around you are hearing is, yeah, got hemorrhoids again. Doctor says you're going to have to surgically remove them. And then, of course, as soon as you're done with your conversation, after I've come up and you've dismissed me, you want to go, service. Can I get some service? So, yeah, people with your earphone, you just take them out. Shut your phone off. Talk to the people next to you. Have some fun. Right? It's true. Cell phones at the bar are no good. And as I mentioned last week, jaywalking is legal now. So, if I see you jaywalking while you're looking at your phone and you're in my path, and you're pulling a small dog on a leash that you're not paying attention to, I will just roll down my window and tell you that's how you're going to die. But if you are looking in your phone, jaywalking, not paying any attention, I am coming straight for you. I got lots of insurance. Well, bartending in Beverly Hills is something that is really, it's fun. I worked every kind of place. As I said, I was really surprised last week that Jennifer Diamond, the psychic, called up Little Jean, who was the spirit in the Lasso Lounge, the bar that I ran on Miami Beach, which is really super cool. We are going to start having Jennifer Diamond, Miss Jennifer Diamond, do a phone in on the first Thursday of every month. So we're going to set up a phone line. Jennifer will, you'll be able to call in, ask Jennifer a question, and they'll be brief because I know that we'll be having a lot of people waiting, but you'll be able to ask her a question. And I'm telling you, she is right on. She's not like Madame Mertzola and I Love Lucy or whatever. She's a bon vivant and she's fun, and but she nails it. So look forward to that. We'll have a number to call Jennifer Pennington, Jennifer Diamond. And a couple other shout out. I want to do a shout out to a guy named Drew Talbert. Now, I've never met this man. Look for him, please. He does a series of restaurant short videos called Bistro Buddy, or, and some of you may be familiar with him, but he plays every character. And you'll just have to watch to experience if you've ever worked in a restaurant or been close in a restaurant, you know, a regular to the point where you see what goes on. This guy is talented. And just a moment. Somebody's at my palatial mansion front door. He is talented, hilarious. I don't know the man. I'm going to try and connect with him at some point. But Drew Talbert, okay? His series is called Bistro Buddy. All right? So anyway, do that. And my guest, can you keep it down, please? What is it, drugs? Ooh, yay, the pharmacy delivered. All right, anyway, back to my show, the Bob Dean Show. Yay. Our guest today is a young man named Michael Hooper. Michael is two years new. Hey, Michael, welcome.
How we doing, Bob?
Glad to see you, man. Glad to see your face. We just met, ladies and gentlemen, last night. I'm going to tell the story, if I may. Michael is a very talented and good-looking actor and writer, and I watched some of his stuff, and he's really a funny guy. And he's sketch comedy is what you want to get into, right, Michael?
Correct, yeah.
And how we met is like, you know, I'm an actor and a comedian, which means I'm a bartender. I guess, Michael, your rent-paying, I refer to it as a rent-paying job.
Right.
Is you work in real estate.
Yep, exactly.
And I've had the same phone number for 19 years, and for some reason, Michael can explain, it's on some list.
Right.
I get calls at least three times a week for people that are interested in my Burbank property. If I want to sell my Burbank property or if I want to sell my Newport Beach property.
Right.
And, you know, if they call with a rotten attitude and they're pushy, like they don't believe, because I always say, I'm terribly sorry that this number is connected, but, you know,
right.
I'm not that person. And yeah. Sometimes if they get snippy, then I'll go, yes, it actually is me. And I'm not going to sell you shit. You know, that sort of thing. But Michael calls yesterday, and I always try and be polite because these guys are doing a job, you know, and you actually were so calm and apologetic because I was nice to you and you were very nice. You didn't just slam the phone down. And we started to chat, and I go, yeah, you know, I'm a bartender, which means I'm an actor. I mean, a comic. And then we laughed about that. And then you said that you did sketch comedy.
Sketch comedy, yeah.
Yeah. So we started talking, had a great conversation. And I was like, well, hey, why don't you come on the show tomorrow? Give this guy a chance to get a little promotion on the Bob Dean Show. Yay.
Well, Bob, you were a lot nicer than about 90% of the people I call, because most of the time, and like, I don't blame them, because when I get phone calls from telemarketers, I just immediately get pissed off and I hang up or I yell at them. But you're really nice. So, you know, it was easy to talk to you, you know?
Yeah. And we talked for like 20 minutes. And like I said, the point is that it's not like there's this fireman's fund, you know, they call for firemen and police.
Right.
And I support firemen and police. Police defunders, look at it now, dumbasses. Anyway, I support farm, but there's one group that calls, and it's the same guy, and he's real Southern, and I'm Southern. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. And they call him from different numbers, and he always goes, "Is Bob there?" And the first time, I thought maybe somebody that I knew. We made conversation. And then he turns out that he's, you know, hitting up money for the police. So I made a donation, right? Right. Every other day, this guy calls, "Is Bob there? Is Bob there?" I'm serious. And this goes on for what? 2 years, right?
Right.
2 years.
Right.
So now
donation.
He calls and I'm like, "Bob's dead." And then he goes, "Oh, sorry to hear that, but maybe you can help, you know." And I understand that it's a real service. But I learned after I lost my house in the Nashville flood, and I tried to run down where every nickel of any to the United Way, to the Red Cross, to all of these, text 919 to make a donation, you know.
Right.
After I realized that losing my house was a bust, I still continued to research that stuff. And I couldn't find any logistics, any legitimate paths that any of that donated money went. So,
yeah, I was going to say, what was the company that you donated to? Because I feel like that might have been just his bank account, you know?
Exactly. Well, I didn't donate. The first one, I sent like $15 to the policeman's fund, and they did send me receipts.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
But then after I researched, you know, that there was a flood in Nashville like 13 years ago that nobody really knew about. It was actually worse than Katrina. I lost my home.
Oh,
and,
wow.
I had all the insurance in the world, blah, blah, blah. But after I realized it, because I was just so distraught and sad, but I kept in my office, I kept building and building and building and following the trails of where the money, like Garth Brooks did 10 shows and every dollar went to flood relief. Well, when I got in touch with the flood commissions, the FEMA, the Nashville government, I even called the government just for anybody that might be able to explain it. Honest to God, not one. And I did this for weeks. Nobody could tell me where that money went. So my point of all that being is that I will, like, you know, I read to the blind and I foster animals in my home. Mm-hmm. And that's how I give back, you know, I give food to homeless people and all, but I'll never donate another dollar. I'm sorry. No cash money.
That's probably smart. Unless I call you back again, asking for money.
Right. Well, you can change your voice. You're an actor. You can change your voice. Let's talk about you, Hooper. So I thought that it was pretty cool that you called, because my guest for the day, I have great guests lined up. We can pre-record in the future. I'm real excited because the old show was great, but this is going to be better with the visual and all. So running into you was perfect. Tell us about yourself. You are from where?
So I'm from
Morocco. How old are you?
I'm 24 years old. 24 years old.
How old?
24.
24. Okay. Yeah.
Although I probably shouldn't say that as an actor, you know, we kind of like to be, ambiguous about age, but yeah, I'm 24. I'm from Moraga, California. So it's a small town in the East Bay of San Francisco. The closest city is Walnut Creek. I think more people know Walnut Creek than Moraga. I grew up there, with divorced parents. My dad lived in Walnut Creek. My mom lived in Moraga. And, I was a athlete my whole life. Played football and baseball in high school. Never really wanted to go the route of acting while I was in high school. I think part of me was a little scared of being
made fun of.
Exactly. As an athlete, you're with drama club. Exactly. Yeah. But I was in a play when I was in fourth grade, which was a formative experience, if I may say so myself. It was the high school play, and they were auditioning for one kid in the age range of like 8 to 12. So my mom got this mail, like this email saying that they were holding auditions, and she was like, "Hey, Michael, I think you should do this." And of course I was like, "No, you know, fuck that. I don't want to do any like plays or anything." I was busy doing baseball and basketball and other sports. But finally she convinced me. So I was like, "All right, you know what? Fuck it. I'll go." So I go there and there's probably, 300 kids right around my age. And we all just sit in this auditorium and we just went one by one saying like a couple lines and then singing a section of this song that was in the play. And I remember, like, I went up and I sang and then went home and that was it. And I was like, okay, whatever, cool. That was fine. And then a couple nights later, me and my mom get home and there's a voicemail, like, on the telephone. So my mom played it and it was the director of the high school musical. And he was calling. He's like, hey, we'd like to offer your son the part. My mom was stoked, you know, and I didn't really understand what the fuck was going on, you know. But I did the play and it was such a, like, so many people came out. And because when you're in a small town, you know, that's pretty much all people have to do is go to the football games and then the high school musicals, you
exactly.
know, in the local saloon. But yeah, all these people showed up. We had like four or five performances. And I remember the coolest part was I got to skip class one day and all the elementary schools came and watched me. So I was in front of like all my peers, you know, and I got to skip class. I felt like a total celebrity, you know, a child celebrity. But having
that's
that
a good feeling, man. That's a good feeling.
It is. It is. I mean, it's,
even as an adult, but to have that done as a kid, you know.
Exactly. It's I compare it to hitting like a walk off in baseball, you know, something which I haven't done many. I've done like one or two back in high school, but the feeling of performance, like the performance high you get is similar to making like a really big play in sports. So I had that at an early age and I was like, wow, this is fucking cool, you know? But I always kept that at the back of my mind. I never really fully pursued it out of fear of, you know, being vindicated in high school. And, you know, and I was probably one of those people shitting on other people who might have been football players wanting to try out for the play too, you know, because I was insecure about it. So,
Yeah, because even you know, my elementary school days were in the 60s, 67 right. through 72. And it's the same thing today. It's the same kind of thing. You know, if you want to do it, you do it. Now, I did musical theater in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. And fortunately, because my brother Greg was like 6'4 and a year ahead of me, nobody ever right. fucked with me.
Right,
but
right.
I loved that shit. I loved mm-hmm. musical theater. I was Mr. Bumble in the fifth grade production of Oliver Twist at Walter S. Miller Elementary School. And then I was Uncle Max in the sixth grade production of The Sound of Music at Walter S. Miller Elementary School.
That's awesome.
And yeah. And then, but we moved to Nashville, Tennessee to this very small, very white WASPy high school that didn't have a theater program. And you know,
what's the name of the area in Nashville that you live?
Westmead, Bellevue.
You live in Bellevue. Okay. So I lived in Nashville with my brother for a few months. My brother lives there. And he's one of the people, he's a developer. So he's one of those people building those tall and skinnies, you know, yeah. all over Nashville now. But I lived with him during COVID. And I worked for State Farm. So I was thinking, like, when you're talking about the floods and stuff, that, you know, I was trying to sell people insurance for that kind of shit, you know? Yeah.
Well, tell your brother, thanks. He's one and nothing personal, but that's why I will never go back to Nashville. I want to remember, I haven't been there in 11 years and I want to remember it the way it was. Cause buddy, it was the coolest frigging place in the world to grow up.
Yeah.
And my parents are buried there. I've got a world of friends who are like, come home, come visit. And I was actually planning on retiring there, moving back, but before the house situation, and I had all the insurance in the world. It's a long and ugly story. But you just get screwed. No offense to you insurance guys. Well, offense to Wells Fargo. They can kiss my ass. Wells Fargo mortgage. Fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm allowed to say that. And Safeco Insurance Company.
Right.
And Carmine's Restaurant. I'm just getting some shit off my... You can all go to hell. Anyway, but yeah, Nashville is a groovy town now. Everybody loves it, but it's as expensive to live there as it is in LA County now.
It's getting up there. It's getting up there. Luckily, my brother started working there three or four years ago. So he got in when it was just starting to become big.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, I mean, you go there and you're right. The property values increased exponentially. You know, it's...
Well, my father was a brilliant businessman. He worked in plastics, industrial plastics, and he foresaw that growth, but he was 20 years too early. And the projects and the things that he invented and that sort of stuff were just two way ahead of their time. It's another long story. But Nashville, I have the best memories, dude. I'm telling you, at your age, Nashville was a kick-ass town.
So when you moved there, sorry, I cut you off. You were saying, did you perform in any musical theater when you moved?
No, that was it. There was no musical theater. Our schools, it was Bellevue High School, which is now Bellevue Middle School, and there's a big battle going on out there. But it's a one-level school that was air-conditioned, and it was like state-of-the-art, and it was the best in Metro. But they had a theater, but they didn't have a theater program. Okay, gotcha. It was everything was all about sports. And
of course.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a big guy. I was a solid guy. And my father was my family, as I mentioned, friggin' football, ice hockey, basketball. My mother, God rest her soul, could quote you any statistic. Her teams were Vanderbilt, Penn State, and the Kentucky Wildcats were her three favorites. And she, you know, University of Tennessee, but Alabama, she couldn't stand them, you know. And my mother was a beautiful woman. This is the story I was going to tell you. My dad was captain of his – they were both very handsome people. My dad was captain of the Uniontown High School football team in 1947. My mom was a cheerleader for Germantown High, their arch rival.
Right.
My mom was engaged to this guy named – I learned all this after they passed. My mother was engaged to this guy named – my father's best friend, who was Jack Moxley. Who was a really good looking dude, blonde hair. You remind me of him because I've seen pictures. And they were the it couple, and they were going to get married, but my mother refused to convert to Catholicism because she's Greek Orthodox. So they had this big fight and blew up.
Wow.
And then my dad waited 2 years and then he swooped in and stole my mother's heart. Okay. And this guy, this Moxley guy, he died a bachelor. And when he died, they found my mother's picture on his nightstand. How romantic is that?
God, dude.
So the point is about how they're horrible. So into football, especially Penn State. My Uncle John scored the first touchdown in the first Liberty Bowl to win it for Penn State. I mean, it's screaming in our house on Saturday and Sunday. I never got into it. Now, they never pushed me into Little League or football. I was into cars, and I still am into cars.
Right.
And I played a little football in the street, street hockey and basketball in the driveway hoop and that sort of thing.
Right.
But I never went out for the teams and all that sort of thing. So the point is that, you know, if I haven't already told you, I am I play for the other team. I'm a homosexual, but I'm the kind that, you know, but if you, and I don't care what anybody thinks, if you get in my face about it, I'll kick the crap out of you. That's kind of, I like muscle cars and beer. I'm a bear.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I was living in Miami and I was young and thin and tan and working in clubs. But I was 27 and I went back to Nashville for Christmas and I had to tell my folks, I had this big thing. I got to tell them.
Right. Of course.
So I come home from this party and I'm a little buzz and my parents had a couple of drinks and the fire's burning. And I walk right in the door and I walked up to my mom and I said, Mother, I have something to tell you. I said, I'm a homosexual. And she put her hands on my shoulders and she looked right in my eyes and these were conservative people. I mean, I knew that she didn't want to hear it, you know?
Right.
So she goes, you're my son and I will love you forever. And then my dad walks in the room and, I said, Dad, I have something to tell you. I'm gay. And my dad goes, so what? Like, he goes, so what? And he sat back down in the chair by the fire. Then my mother, with her hands still on my shoulders, I had this funny thought. I go, well, Mom, you know, since I came out, there's something I really got to confess to you. And she's like, what is it, sweetheart? And I go, I hate football. Her fingernails dug into my shoulders. And she looked at my dad. She goes, did you hear what your son just said? She looked at me. She looked at my dad. She goes, he hates football. She's going back and forth. She goes, Robert, how can you hate football? That's sacrilege. What am I going to tell the neighbors?
Right.
You blew a basket, man. It was hilarious.
That's
that was my football story that I use that in my act, and I love to tell that story.
Yeah, that's fucking classic, man.
It's classic, man.
That's a perfect idea for a comedy skit right there.
Seriously, that's working.
Growing up in the South, you know.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why I split to Florida, because you know, we were white. I'm a white man of privilege. What's this white man of privilege crap? Just because I'm older and gray and I'm wearing a blue blazer, white privilege. I said, you, I have no idea how hard I had it growing up on the mean streets of Westmead, Bellevue. Our swimming pool, I go, our swimming pool didn't have a diving board.
Yeah, exactly.
It gets a lot of laughs. Some people get pissed off. But that would be a cool comedy skit. Hmm. But maybe we can work on that together. It's an idea.
That's a great idea.
Now tell us, let's get into you more. Tell us about projects that are going on. Now, you said you had an acting class last night. Who are you studying with? Anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I study with Taylor Nichols. It's a really small class. And another funny story of how I met him was I have like a side hustle where I go to yard sales and I buy items I think I can resell and I just flip them. So I drove past this area in North Hollywood and there was a sign that said yard sale. I was like, all right, cool. I go to the yard sale and there's this dude outside helping this woman. And I was talking to him and he was like, yeah, this is my neighbor. I'm helping her out. I was like, oh, cool. And I see this sweatshirt that says Jurassic Park. And I was like, oh, this is, you know, a cool sweatshirt. Like, I might wear this. He's like, yeah, I was actually in that movie. And I was like, oh, you were an extra? And he was like, no, I was one of the main characters. And I was like, oh shit. Okay. Well, you know, I'm an actor, you know, cause you got to tell everyone you're an actor in LA, who knows, you know? So he was like, well, hey, like take my contact info. And, you know, I do a class. It's a really small class, every Wednesday. So if you're interested, you know, just shoot me a text. So at the time I was at Beverly Hills Playhouse, which, that was a good studio. I have nothing bad to say. I really liked it, but I was kind of looking for a change to switch it up, try a different technique. So I reached out to Taylor and he was like, yeah, you know, you can come and join us. So I've been there ever since.
Is he taking new students?
Yeah, he is. He's always taking new students.
Well, the reason I ask is because I was studying with Jeffrey Brooks for several years and he's great.
I've heard about him.
Yeah, he has Red Rock. He has Red Rock casting now, and
right.
And then I started swaying into comedy, and but I've done a couple of plays in town with Crown City Theater that used to be at any rate. I love live theater, Yeah. And I love being in a class. Right. The only thing that gets in my way of live theater is because I pay the bills by working at night.
Right, right.
But I've been, this was a new thing, getting out of, because I'm trying to brush the friggin' cobwebs out of my brain.
Right.
I need to start getting out there more to open mics, which I love to do. And it's, I have no fear. You know, I have friends in front of and behind the camera that are very successful that I'll introduce you to along the way. And they're really cool people. Oh, yeah. And they're like, stand up scares the shit out of me. And I'm like, dude, for me, it's just like being behind the bar.
Yeah, I love
hecklers. I love large African American women with long fingernails who want to heckle you, you know, along with everybody else. And I love working with the audience. But I want to get into a class, and I've been looking around. But you know, maybe you can tell me a little bit more about this guy after the show, and
it's funny you say that because we're actually looking for more guys in our class because we have a plethora of women. Like we have like probably 80% women, and it's hard because we want to do, you know, some guy girl scenes. So we're looking for more guys. He actually texted me asking me, he's like, hey, do you have any friends? You can.
Oh,
bring
cool.
You
know? So I'm in the, according to LA casting, I am in the 55 to 70 range right now. So I could be dad or grandpa or the pervy neighbor.
That's perfect. You know? That's perfect.
I'm ashamed of it. So, let's talk about that. Make sure we get on that. Where do you guys meet?
We meet in North Hollywood. I think it's Hollywood on Cole Avenue. It's actually in the same building that Anthony Mindell's studio is. There's like a bunch of different units. So we play what's it called? Magical chairs every time we go there. It's a different room, you know, but it's a really small, it's not like a nice, huge studio. Like I was lucky in my old studio. It was a nice big studio, but this one's really small, but he's a really fantastic coach. And I know he's a good coach when I'm always frustrated when I do a scene because he's on my ass about stuff.
Right.
Like, oh, fuck you, man. You're a fucking asshole, blah, blah, blah. But then after I go home, I think about it. I'm like, you know what? The fact that I'm frustrated means I got shit I got to work on, you know? So
exactly. And when you leave, or at least when I leave a class like that, because, you know, we all get down and like, what am I doing this for? You know, I moved out here 19 years ago and I got a great manager, but I haven't booked anything in forever. And I'm a talented guy.
Yeah.
But so you get down on it. You know, you're like, why bother? But then when you go to a class, like for me, when I go to a class like that, and when I leave and I get in my car and I get on the 101, I am smiling from ear to ear.
Right.
And I feel like this is where I need to be. It doesn't mean, you know, I don't have any rose colored glasses about fame or fortune, although that would be swell.
Right, right.
It's just the art of the art of the craft, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I know exactly what you're saying, and I'd really need to get, because I want to get my creative juices flowing again, and a group like that sounds perfect.
Right, absolutely. No, it's a really good community we have, and not to knock my old studio, I love them, but this new studio is great. We have a lot of people who are in the industry right now, actually. Well, I guess there's not really an industry right now with the strike and everything, but a lot of people who are pretty high on the totem pole. We have a producer who has produced a number of things from like Criminal Minds to NCIS to SWAT Team. And she writes for those shows too. She's actually in our class. We have I don't know.
Oh, that's right. You shouldn't do it over this. Yeah, I'm only curious because I have a friend who's big with Shonda Rhimes, and I was just going to see if they knew each other, but yeah, no names. You got it. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. But she's in the studio, and it's just fun, man. It's good. And it's like you said, like, it's all about the craft, you know, cause you go to these things and you can just forget, you know, if you had a shitty day, if someone asked for a ridiculous cocktail or 10 ridiculous cocktails at work, you know, you can just leave that behind when you come to the studio, and you know, you're just there to learn about art or learn about acting. So it's a nice little like escape from everything, but it's hard, you know, you learn a lot, and that's why I like it. You know, our coach is really direct, straight to the point, which is exactly what I need, you know?
And it's Wednesday nights from what, Wednesday 7 night, to 11 or something?
7 to 10. Yeah.
7
yeah.
to 10. Yeah. After the show, for sure. I want a link to, look into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's sweet. Mm-hmm. Do I have to bring my own lines? I mean, my own sides and all that stuff.
Oh no!
I like the first thing with Jeffrey books. You know, I knew nothing, and I where they say, you know, when they give you your sides, and
right?
Like, you know, make up, you know, pick your character and do his backstory and stick with it.
Yeah,
and I just couldn't get it. You know, yeah, I mean. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to be a bricklayer who drives a milk truck. Yeah. So what is my backstory? You know, I was an orphan, and then I was raised by, and it didn't see what it would have to do with
the scene. Me. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, I don't, that stuff that my hard head doesn't absorb well, but I love being in front of the camera. I love being on stage. A lot of impromptu stuff. Like I did, whatchamacallit? What's the comedy thing? The improv Runnings comedy
or UCB or something.
The one over on Melrose.
Upright Citizen.
Yeah, no. Groundlings.
Groundlings. Okay. Yeah.
When I first moved to town and had a serious coin packed away, you know, I did the first three. I did one, two, and then intro, whatever it was. And I like improv, and I'm good at improv, but the Groundlings was, I didn't have a good time because everybody was just trying to be so hard to be funny and talking over each other.
Exactly.
So unless they put us into like two people doing something, I just kind of stood in the corner.
Right.
And I did it up to three. So then when we went to audition to see if you could go into, you know, the school itself, the third one, I was just standing there kind of like this, and the girl comes up and she goes, I don't think you're going to be worthy. You know, and I go, look, I've already done one, two, an intro. And she goes, real, I've passed one, two, an intro. And she goes, really? And I go, yeah, I said, I love it, but I just don't want to heck and peck over everybody.
Right.
And there's no point to that, except, you know, I do enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done a couple of short, I want to send you a link to a short film that I did that a buddy of mine who now lives in Australia, but it's a couple things that I haven't done a lot. But this short film, it's about webcams and how they screw up and
right.
Yeah, it's on my website. If you go down videos, you'll find it.
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
I've also, in terms of like projects too, like I sent you that short the other day. about the astrology cops.
Which was great. Folks, look for it's on YouTube, right?
It's unlisted right now. So we're actually, it's not finished yet. We have, we're waiting on our scorer, our composer to score it. It should be ready within the next week or so. But yeah, we're going to put that on YouTube, hopefully in the next week. And then I got another one that's almost finished. And then we have a third one. And we're either going to repackage it as like an episode and put it on YouTube, or we're just going to do individual like comedy skits. But yeah, it'll be out there soon.
I honest to God, I laughed, and I never hold back on criticism. I mean, it wouldn't be offensive, but it was great. And it was funny too, because the first film I did in this town, I played the dead guy too.
Oh, really?
That was laying on the floor. Yeah. I played this doctor and, behind the front wheel of a Mercedes Benz who had been, you know, his throat was slit
when
he got in his car. So for like 9 hours, I just sat there like this with all the blood all over me.
Yeah.
And I was so thrilled, you know, and I got credit, the dead guy, you know,
dude, it's a lot of pressure.
I came home that night and pulled in the driveway, and my neighbor's apartment had been burglarized by some bad people. And there were like 20 police cars around. And when I came walking out of the garage, they were like, oh my God. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did it on purpose.
It's a lot of pressure being the dead guy. You know, you got to just sit there and, you know, not move. You know, it's fucking, it can be hard. Yeah.
But astrology cops, let us know how it goes so I can promote it for you when it's done.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate that.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Now, what, you live in North Hollywood, you said?
So I live in Pico Robertson, like between Culver City and Beverly Hills.
Oh, so you're pretty close. I milk Santa Monica for the address. About, you know where Stoner Park is?
Yeah.
I live on Stoner Avenue. Just catty corner to the skate park there.
Right.
I say Santa Monica because Santa Monica and Brentwood come right together there, and it's easier than saying West LA.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I always tell my friends back east, I'm like, you can walk to where OJ killed Nicole from my house.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's such bad taste.
Landmark.
I'm like, well,
what landmark. Yeah.
Of course it is.
Allegedly.
Yes. Pardon me, America.
Right.
I smoke cigarettes inside my home.
Like yeah, I said, you got a nice house back there, man. I know
it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cool.
I have a stipend from my great grandfather, and I have to work 16 hours a week to get my money. So that's why I still bartend.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty cool, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. I mean, shit. I wish.
Do you play piano?
Me? No. I play sax a little bit.
Do you really? Yeah. Man, I fucking love saxophone. I love the brass horns.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to play something. And by the way, this is just a backdrop, dude.
No, I know. I was fucking with you.
Oh, yeah. This is not my style. There'll be a lot more freaky-ass artwork on the walls.
Right.
But we did have somebody think that it was really my place. And they're like, yeah, I got some feedback like, what the hell, man? What the hell? You're bitching about not having shifts and all that sort of thing, and you're living there?
In a mansion, like, yeah.
The next thing, you know, I could be in a – I should get a homeless encampment backdrop. That would be hilarious. What kind of comedians are you into?
Honestly, my favorite comedians are probably – in terms of sketch comedy, I think my top two favorites are – Chappelle and Key and Peele, but mostly Key and Peele. I get a lot of inspiration from Key and Peele.
Brilliant.
A lot of the sketches I write are like, they have kind of the same like outline as a Key and Peele skit, like kind of a similar like beat, like the way the beats are. And in terms of like stand-up comedians, I think Chappelle is great. Chris Rock is great. Jerry Seinfeld, you know, I think Jerry Seinfeld's great just because he's so good at, he's a really clean comedian, you know, which is hard in my opinion. You know, I don't like
toilet humor.
Yeah. And like, I do toilet humor as well, but it's so much more difficult when you're trying to be, you know, like PG-13. And I think Jerry Seinfeld is so good at just taking like little minutiae in everyday life and turning it into a whole bit. And obviously Seinfeld's a great show. Larry David's great. But I'd say my two biggest influences when I write comedy are South Park and Key and Peele. Those are my top two.
South Park, what the hell is with that show? I mean, you can't stop watching it. I mean, I've been watching it for what, how 40 seasons now or whatever.
Yeah.
And Family Guy too. Family Guy pisses me off sometimes, which is what it's designed to do,
right?
Because they're so friggin' funny. But yeah. Then when Peter's drunk driving and they show a baby carriage and a lady in his grill, sometimes that
that's
too much. Yeah. But you know, 99% of everything just makes me want to wet my pants. The same as South Park, you know.
South Park too, man. I don't know how they haven't been canceled in today's world.
You've seen the episode, and of course Tally. Don't forget to say Tal. Love Tally. But when Cartman goes on Maury Povich, I know you've seen that, haven't you?
Yeah.
Whatever. I do what I want.
What I want. Yeah.
I run with gangs and I kill people.
Yeah. That one's so fucking great.
I say it all the time. Whatever. I do what I want.
Yeah.
But they're really good. I like Kathleen Madigan. Are you familiar with her?
No,
check her out sometime. She's hilarious.
Yeah, I need to check
her out. You know, she's young and whatchamacallit. The one that did I didn't like Two Broke Girls, but I liked the chick that I'll think of it in a minute. She's really funny. I like old comics,
right?
Like Phyllis Diller. If you're not familiar with these guys, you need to Google them. Phyllis Diller. Now, she was this this tiny woman, and she was the hit of the world. She had this big hair that she and a cigarette holder, and she always talked about her husband Fang. They lived in Beverly Hills and all this sort of thing.
Right.
She did this. I was watching a clip last night, and she was born in 1917, and she did like her first show in 1955 at the NBC studio here, and they asked her, "What was your big faux pas that they almost didn't put on? You know, that you know could have got you kicked off the air."
Right.
She started laughing. She goes, "Well, my husband Fang's little sister was real thin. And, you know, I was real excited that she had gone out on a date. And when she came home, she goes, I thought she got married because she had all this rice in her hair."
Right.
And, then the girl goes, "No, a Chinaman threw up on me."
Oh my God.
And she's got this joke, you know, she shit like this. She goes, you know, like she's sitting there like on the Tonight Show, you know, real dry with her cigarette holder. And she goes,
right.
"You know, I have a friend who has the worst luck. She owns an unpainted furniture store. And last night vandals broke in and painted everything." Good joke.
Yeah.
But anyway, old comics, of course, Don Rickles, Bob Newhart.
Brothers,
yeah, shit like that.
Yeah.
There's just so much. You know, mine is observational, and I'm real proud of my comedy, and I like to write. How I write is, behind the bar, I'll bring home five or six little notes,
notepads. Yeah.
I'll put them in my pocket, then I bring them home, and I stuff them into Ziploc bags. And because, you know, every day you don't feel like writing, right?
Right. No, of course.
But then when I wake up and I feel like writing and I'm jazzed, I take all these bags to the public library and I get to a big table and I go, okay, this is work. This is dating. This is the cars.
Right.
This is school, whatever. I put them in. And then I write. I don't use a computer or a phone at all because I'm so old and I hate them. And I write it longhand in spiral notebooks. And I'll pick up the piece of paper and word it in. And I've got 45 solid minutes of good comedy that I'm real proud of.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I just need to get out there more and start shaking it up. You know, I've just been sitting on my butt. COVID slowed me down.
You
know, but
you could even write a bit about the whole process of you going into a library with a Ziploc bag full of sticky notes, you know?
Yeah, actually, that's pretty good.
That right there would be. It's an interesting say, you know.
Well, you know, I'm older, of course, and there was a woman in my class, Sunda Kronquist at the LA School of Comedy. You need to come down there with me sometime. They do open mics on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's on the corner of Santa Monica and Westwood.
Okay.
She's a Black Swedish Jew. Google her, Sunda, S-U-N-D-A, Kronquist. She's brilliant.
So but awesome.
And It's like it's $10 for 10 minutes, but it's a great little regular group of people. Mm-hmm. It's not like people that, you know, go up and do something stupid and then run out the door to go to another spot. It's really
right.
And you need to come and visit with me there sometime.
Absolutely.
That's where I got to start. And I had a point that I was going to go to with doing the bit about the piece. Oh, yeah. No, no, I'm older. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, I make this joke, which is true. In 1982, I flipped a coin, Miami or Los Angeles.
Right.
And Los Angeles, Miami won. Okay. I wish every day that I had come to Los Angeles back then, because I could have been a dried up has been by now.
Yeah, right. You know?
And people are like, oh, Steve Harvey. There's a woman in one of my classes, and she went to see Steve Harvey, and he had a Q&A. And she said, I'm trying to get into comedy. And he flat out goes, you're too old. You'll never make it. You know, I mean, he could have said something like, yeah, you know, if you love it, do it. But what a dick. Yeah. What a dick. I worked at Wolfgang's Steakhouse in Beverly Hills.
Right.
For a long time, a real high-end place, which is where I've gotten so many great guests for my former podcast.
Oh, I bet.
Including Rocky Carroll from CSI. He's cool as shit.
Oh, wow.
And Anson Williams from Happy Days. And the Soup Nazi from Seinfeld.
No more soup.
Yeah. You have to look at my old shows. So one night, I was a bartender, and a waiter says to this big-time comedy guy, who looked like he was 100 years old.
Right.
My friend Mario said to the guy, he goes, hey, you should go catch Bob Sett, that guy behind the bar. He's really good.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, nah, he's too old. He's too gray. You know, people don't want to see him. Right. He's not in the demographic. And he goes, I know comedy. And my friend Mario called me those exact words.
Right.
So as the guy was leaving, I go, I said it out loud. I go, man, you're 100 fucking years old, and your wife is obviously got plastic boobs. Now that's comedy. And then I grab my crotch and I go, here's your demographic, baby. And his jaw just dropped. And because that's, of course, naturally, I could have just shot myself in the foot with that. And there's no
point. Right.
But I was like, screw you, Grandpa. Yeah, you know, you calling me old? And, you know, whatever. But getting up on stage, as you know, is the most friggin' fun in the entire world.
I've actually never been on stage. I've never done
stand-up. You haven't?
Oh, I have notes of stand-up that I've written. I just get so nervous when I'm – like, I feel like when I'm acting on stage, it's easier because I'm playing a character. But me on stage, you know, it's fucking scary. I don't know how you
– What are you doing Friday night?
Friday night, I am – going out with my girlfriend, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to bring her, seriously.
That could be a date night. Where are you performing?
I'm going to go. Unless I get stuck with a work shift, and I'll let you know. But really, because guys bring their girls, too. It's a small room. It's comfortable. If you want to bring a flask. I'm telling you, it's going to open up a whole new interest in something for you.
Dude, I love going to stand-up bars and shit.
Yeah, it's not a bar. It's a studio, but you can bring a flask, you know, and that sort of thing. Nobody cares. But it's like, you know, eclectic chairs and little settees and stuff, but it's a professional stage, and everybody's great. And it's just like going to a club. So
What's the name of the bar?
It's the L.A. School of Comedy.
L.A. School of Comedy.
Just Google that. It's on the corner of Westwood and Santa Monica. Starts at 7 o'clock, and if you're just coming in to watch, it's $5 a piece.
Dude, you might see me there. I mean, that's
I hope you will.
It's perfect date night, you know. $5, I mean, shit, it's better than spending 70.
Yeah, and like I said, the comics, you're getting a professional show,
right? You know? Absolutely, yeah, absolutely,
especially when I get up there.
yeah,
but comedy. I don't know what it is. I saw this, you know, you have to have your strong core act.
Absolutely.
So when you falter, you have something to pull back.
Exactly.
Yeah. And this one kid, I can't remember his name, but he was like 22, 23 years old. He was a cool kid. He was a waiter at that steak ranch place on Sunset.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a cool kid. And it was his first time doing it. And he gets up on stage. We through the LA School of Comedy, we got to do a bunch of stuff at the Laugh Factory. I don't know if you have looked at my website, some of my shows.
I saw some of your stuff there. Yeah,
I'm reasonably amusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great, man.
So, but the point is, the kid gets up on stage there and he starts losing it. And he, you know, and it's so, you're like, oh my God, please, buddy, right. You can do it. You can do it, you know? Right. And then you want the big hook to come out, you know, mm-hmm. like in a vaudeville. So he's losing his whole train of thought. And so he was talking about how millennials are superior to everybody over 40.
Right.
You know, that was his shtick.
Right.
And so he goes, oh, I'm going to show you what a millennial looks like. And he takes off his shirt and he's real good looking. He's cut. Right.
Yeah.
And so people are like going, like they don't know how to respond. They're like, yay, right. like this. And then he kicks off his loafers,
yeah.
takes off his pants, and he's wearing these teeny tiny little black bikini underwear and he's flexing. And he's like, this is a millennial. And I'm in the back going, I can't wait for my turn. I can't wait for my turn. And I think I may have repeated this story in the last show. So just deal with other my fabulous watchers. So anyway, I'm like, I can't wait to get up. And he's going, this is what a millennial looks like. This is what a millennial. And when it was my turn, I get up to this mic. And I usually wear a blazer, you know, button down, tie, khakis, loafers, right?
Right.
So I get up there and I just say his name was Joe. I'm like, Joe, to the microphone. And I take off, real slow, take off my jacket and I threw it down. And the people, some of my friends that knew me are like, oh shit, what's he going to do? And I go, Joe, are you watching me? And I take off the tie and I go, I said, that's what a millennial looks like. And I take it off again. And then I start taking my shirt off and I'm wearing a crew neck t-shirt. Uh-huh. And I unbuckle my khakis and they fall right down to the floor and people start clapping, you know, they're like, yay,
Go,
this is what a baby boomer looks like. And then I take off my, and I'm fucking hairy as I don't shave anything, shoulders, back. And I take off my shirt and my boxers and I'm flexing like he did. I'm going and people are clapping. And then I turn around and they see my back. And I think like four women fainted. And everybody's like, yeah. And then I turn around and I go, this is your future. And then from that point on, when I go to regular shows where people know me, they're like, take off your shirt.
Yeah. That's great. Hey, the messages, I think Sam messaged us in the, he said, time to wrap up.
See, I'm looking all over the screen, but I was looking at my wife. So it's time to wrap up. We're doing it, Sam. Michael Hooper, what a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, man.
Do you have a website you want to promote or Instagram or anything?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is Michael H. Hooper. And then my Instagram, I got like three Instagrams. I got a real estate Instagram, my acting Instagram, my normal Instagram. But you can follow me at MH Hoop. That's my acting Instagram to see some cool acting photos. I post some of my skits on there and stuff. And then also the Live Like Bub organization. It's a good friend of mine from high school. His brother just passed away. And they set up this foundation for like different charities that you can donate to. So check that out if you're interested, but yeah, man, thank you so much for having me. And I mean, it was a wild turn of events in the last
wild turn of events to new friendship. Make sure you get with me after the show, give me a call or make sure we have each other's numbers and think about Friday night.
Absolutely.
And everybody else out there, I want to thank Sam Hassan, my producer. I want to thank you listeners and viewers, please support us. I am Bob Dean 2971 on Instagram. My regular Facebook page is Bob Dean. And then there's the Bob Dean Show. So please like that because it's stagnant from 2020 and our time is up. And thank you, Michael Hooper. And thank you, Sam. Bob. And thank you everybody out there in internet TV land for streaming the Bob Dean Show. Yay.
You're listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.